Welcome to Locked On Yankees. I'm Jesse Spector, the editor of LockedOnYankees.com, a lifelong New Yorker and a former Daily News and Sporting News guy now found at a variety of other places as a freelancer, including here. It'll be fun. Let's have fun. Today will be fun because today is Yankees-Red Sox Day. It's here already. We're like, the Yankees are 10 games into the season. The Red Sox are 9 games into the season. I know they've opened the season against each other before, so it's not like it's crazy early. And really, like, they have 6 series a year against each other. They really should just have one per month. But it still just always feels kind of jarring when, like, you're barely into the season. Or, you know, when they started the season against each other, it was nuts. But, you know, that's where we are. So, today's show, John Taylor is here from Sports Illustrated. He is publicly and unabashedly a Red Sox fan. Obviously, that does not carry over to his writing, which is fantastic. Really glad to have him on the show, and that will be most of the show. But before we do that, I just want to talk about, you know, the series coming up and where we stand going in, which is that the Yankees are 5-5, playing really just tremendously bad baseball coming out of that series against the Orioles. Glad for them that they had a day off on Monday, able to, you know, go up to Boston, maybe clear their heads a little bit after, so, you know, whirlwind first 10 games, and head up to Boston and get ready for this big rivalry series against a Red Sox team that is 8-1 and just not exactly blowing the doors off of people, and they've only played the Marlins and the Rays. So this will be the first real test to see what the Red Sox are made of. Not that the Yankees have, you know, done themselves a lot of dignity against the teams that they've played, which are, you know, they did take the two that they played from the lowly Rays, I suppose, but against the Blue Jays and Orioles, split 4 with the Jays and lost 3 out of 4 to the Orioles. So this will close out the Yankees' opening tour of the American League East before they head on out to Detroit for their first non-division games of the season. And the pitching matchups are good ones. Tuesday night, tonight, Luis Severino, Chris Sale. Both have been fantastic to start the season. Ace on ace, not much more you can say about it than that. Certainly the Yankees well-equipped to go against left-handed pitching this year, and that should also come in handy for them on Wednesday night, tomorrow, as David Price takes the mound for the Red Sox. Price has also been great to start the season in 2 starts, and he will face Masahiro Tanaka, who basically just stayed in 1 inning too long against the Orioles. He was great against Toronto in his first start of the season. So you got that. And then Thursday, Red Sox bring Rick Porcello to the mound. Yankees, Porcello, not quite as good as Price and Sale, who have basically been untouchable to start the year, but Porcello's still off to a good start himself. The Yankees, as of the moment of this recording, are going with TBA. I don't really understand why that's the case. I know it is CC Sabathia's turn in the rotation, but with the off day on Monday, the Yankees can go to Sonny Gray on normal rest, and I have no idea why they would do anything but that, but go to Sonny Gray on normal rest, 4 days rest on Thursday night at Fenway, and then, you know, back to Jordan Montgomery on Friday in Detroit, and, you know, then take the or go with a TBA on Friday in Detroit and Montgomery on Saturday, however you want to run it, and whichever day you want to have your minor league call up or your Luis Sessa or your Domingo Germán start. You're not giving Sessa or Germán the start at Fenway. I would think that keeping it TBA and not naming Sonny Gray, maybe just gamesmanship, but I don't know. I really can't imagine that it's anybody but Sonny Gray, because nobody else makes any kind of sense for the Yankees to start on Thursday in Boston. But, you know, it's still officially TBA, so we'll see what they do. And as for this show, it's time to talk to John Taylor. But before we do that, I should tell you that if you would like to advertise on Locked On Yankees, you can do that. And you should do that. And what you should do is send an email to lockedonnyy@gmail.com, and we'll get you all set up. That's lockedonnyy lockedonyankees@gmail.com. And that's also the email to hit up, or you can tweet at Locked On Yankees if, for whatever reason, you're not finding the podcast anywhere that you would like to subscribe to it. Seems like we're pretty much everywhere now with iTunes and Google Play and Spotify and, you know, many others that I am not even aware of that we are actually on as part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So glad to be there. Glad for you to subscribe and rate and review the show. Thanks for doing that. And yeah, any questions or comments, LockedOnNYY@gmail.com or LockedOnYankees on Twitter. Welcome to the Yankee Haters Ball. It's been a while since we've had the Yankee Haters Ball, and I am pleased. We've got a great way to reopen it up because here, Sports Illustrated baseball writer, hater of Yankees. You can see it in every article he writes, that anti-Yankee media bias, which of course does not exist except for the fact that if you read every article that he writes, it spells out the first paragraph of every, first letter of every paragraph spells out A-Rod sucks. John Taylor. John, how you doing?
I'm good. You know what's funny is that as someone who did hate A-Rod back then, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, complete 180 on A-Rod. I love Rod now. All hail Rod.
Yeah, we all, that I feel like that includes pretty much everybody except my mom and then, some other columnists who really just have it, never turned the page and never were able to forgive. My mom definitely in that boat, though, of just like, and my mom.
I will say, my SI colleague, Jimmy Trina, formerly of Fox Sports, now back with us, who is our media, kind of our media guy, big Yankees fan, still hates A-Rod, just will not let that one go. Which, to me, is funny that any Yankees fans really hate A-Rod, because if he had not been there in 2009, they don't win that World Series.
They don't get to that World Series.
They don't even get to it. I mean, he destroyed the Twins in the Division Series. He destroyed the Angels in the ALCS. I actually don't remember if he hit all that well in the World Series. I don't think he had a poor World Series, but I don't remember if he was like...
He had
like one really good game and then the rest of the series and there.
Well, he didn't have numbers, but he came through at big times and like he drew a big walk in front of the Matsui hit in Game 6.
Yeah. But either way, it is funny to me that like, you know, there are still some people who still dislike A-Rod, but it seems like a surprising majority of those people are Yankees fans who just never warmed up to him or just never were able to forgive him for his nonstop A-Rodness. So
it's funny. I remember going to a game pre-2009 with a couple of former colleagues. And we sat there and people were booing A-Rod. And the three of us just sat like in the back row of like the company. It was the company seats were like in the back row of the loge level. We sat there and we were screaming, "You can't be booing A-Rod. This guy's a clean player. This guy should be your hero. You're all cheering for Giambi, the big cheater. Come on, this guy's your clean player. Come on." And of course, what happened after that.
But, the one time I remember hearing anyone heckle A-Rod at Yankee Stadium was a game in, summer of 2009 or maybe 2010 with a friend of mine, just up in the 500s, and some really drunk guy next to us. It was the seventh inning, and he had been gone for three innings already. Mm-hmm. Just kept yelling over and over again during his at bat, "A-Rod, where's jean shorts?" And just my friend and I are just like, "That's not even a good. That's not even a good one." Like,
but it is.
And yes, the sanctimony that Yankees fans have with regards to A-Rod is a dirty PED cheat, but Andy Pettit is a saint, and don't ever speak ill of Andy Pettit. I'm already just mentally preparing myself for how angry I'm going to be during this year's Hall of Fame debate stuff when we get to relitigate Andy Pettit's crimes and how no one's going to point out that he was an open and admitted steroid cheat.
Yeah.
Or so. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's just my own personal irritation when it comes to Yankees fans and Andy Pettit.
Andy Pettit tells his wife everything, so this is a man that we have to trust if they're going by the congressional logic. So that was all so much fun all those years ago.
That was joyful.
But you've hated the Yankees for a long time.
Pretty much my whole life. Because the thing is, I I'm a Red Sox fan by birth and by choice, because I was born in Boston, but I didn't grow up there. You know, I've lived most of my life in there. I grew up in the D.C. suburbs in Maryland, and now I live in New York. So, you know, when I was a kid, I kind of had the choice. I can be a Red Sox fan and just kind of stick with my hometown team, quote unquote, or I can be an Orioles fan. This was around like 1996, I want to say, is when I kind of made this decision.
Which is a dangerous time,
because that's the when the Orioles were really good. The 96 Red Sox were nothing really to write home about, except for, I believe, the end of the 96 season was when Nomar made his debut, but that wasn't something that I think 9-year-old me really appreciated. I mean, my favorite Red Sox player growing up was Mo Vaughn, so... and I vividly remember both the 95 ALDS when they got clobbered by Cleveland, and then Vaughn leaving not too long after to join the Angels, which was a kind of a disaster for him, but whatever. But I, for whatever reason, decided that I was not going to be swayed by Geronimo Baroa and, you know, peak Robbie Alomar and the delightful Mike Bordick. I was going to be a Red Sox fan. And that was the smartest decision I think I've ever made in my entire adult life. Or, sorry, not adult, as a child. My entire life at all, period. The single smartest thing I've ever done. So, in that sense, like, now, you know, you choose to be a Red Sox fan, you also choose to hate the Yankees, because that's really, that's what you got to do. That is what you have to do. You don't have a choice in that matter. And, there, you know, every other fan base hates the Yankees, too. Mets fans hate the Yankees. You know, every other AL East team's fan base hates the Yankees. Phillies fans hate the Yankees, you know. Well, I don't know if that's so much hate as this is kind of a mutual, like, appreciation society of just, you know, just the worst fans imaginable. But I think it's kind of part of that identity of being a Red Sox fan, first and foremost, is it's not just you're a Red Sox fan, it's also, and you hate the Yankees. And I can say that there have been plenty of times in my life as a baseball watcher where I have taken as much, if not more, pleasure from a Yankees loss than from a Red Sox win. I've had plenty of those moments. The 2011 and 12 postseasons, which was the one where they lost to the Rangers in the ALCS. Was that 2012? Or is it 2011? Right.
I want to say 12 was they lost to the Tigers.
Yeah, 12 was the Tigers one, because that was one where A-Rod hit like 100, and then eventually we learned that was. Like, during that series, he had asked, HGH doctor guy to come shoot him up. Which, again, going back to A-Rod, he has never not been Alex Rodriguez. There's every moment of his life has just been the most Alex Rodriguez thing.
And yet, a beloved figure.
Beloved. But it's just very... the schadenfreude that exists when it comes to the Yankees... Because the other thing is you don't get, or you... I have not gotten, and certainly most baseball fans alive, except for, you know, those who were really checked in during the late 80s, have never gotten a sustained period of the Yankees being bad. You've always had to take those small victories when you could of, you know, the couple of years there at the end of Jeter's career when they didn't make the playoffs, or whenever they got knocked out of the playoffs, or, you know, or even something like just this season, the way they lost the Orioles. On last Sunday when they, you know, blew a 5-0 lead and Stanton struck out 5 times. And certainly, you know, it's different now because, you know, you cover baseball professionally. I'm not going to be online, you know, gloating or anything. I want to, but hey, I can't. And at the same time, it's also like, I don't want to be out there being like, yeah, Stanton sucks. It's like, I know he doesn't suck. Giancarlo Stanton's a really, really good player. He's defending National League MVP. He's going to end up hitting, like, 55 home runs this year. It's going to be fine in that regard, you know? So for me, it's there's also that weird feeling of, like, it's moved past, like, gloating about it. And more just like, oh, that's curious. The Yankees don't look good right now. I wonder why that is. Covering the sport really changes the way you look at some of these things sometimes. It's just kind of, you're still a fan, but it just kind of forces you to lose some of that fan vision of it, you know?
Oh, I definitely know, because I grew up with a... And I grew up I always feel like I have to explain it, and I shouldn't, because, you know, it's just who I am. But it informs who I am, I guess, that I grew up rooting for both the Mets and the Yankees, with the commonality being of really being against the Red Sox. You know, I was 5 years old when they played the 86 World Series. So I was, you know, rooting for the Mets against the Red Sox. And, later in life, I have had occasion to root for the Red Sox because it benefited me personally to be able to like to cover the 2013 World Series. I was very happy that it was Boston because it meant that I could spend more time with my family. And
you know, yeah, that's the kind of stuff for me where it's like the Yankees being in the playoffs is a good thing for me career-wise because it means I can cover games. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it we have to pay for me to go anywhere. I can go to Yankee Stadium. The Yankees being good is a good thing for me because it means there's more interest in a team that I can go cover that is 30 minutes away by train, you know? So
yeah,
you have to lose that. I don't want Giancarlo Stanton to hit 200 this season. You know, it would be really weird and fascinating, I guess, but at the same time, I don't really want that. You know, I want him to be good. I want all the players to be good. You know, that's the thing. Like, when I was younger, I'd root against all of these guys. You know, I hated Jeter. I hated A-Rod. I hated... I don't know if I really hated Mariano Rivera. I disliked that he existed. Certainly seems like there's really not much personally to hate about Mariano Rivera. I hated Jorge Posada. But, like... And this is something, too, I think, just you get older, too. It's, you know, there are fewer guys to hate because the hate is a very strong feeling, you know, for at a certain age and with, you know, and especially with, you know, the professional responsibilities we've got as baseball writer folks. But, and I will say, too, like, there aren't seemingly guys to hate on the Yankees. Like, as much as I despised all the takes last year of the Yankees are fun, it's like, no, it's not fun to watch Goldman Sachs make money. Like, that's not fun. We should not be rooting for that. There are really likable, pleasant, like, guys on that team who are also really fun to watch play. Like, Stanton and Judge are awesome to watch hit. Like, you know, their batting practice sessions are the coolest thing in the world. Like, if I were a 9-year-old Yankees fan or whatever, or a 29-year-old Yankees fan, I would be going to those every single chance I got. And so that's kind of the weird thing. This Yankee team doesn't really have, hasn't had really in a while, personalities where you're just like, oh, the hell with this guy. Like, you know, like the Mark Teixeira Yankees, like, what is there to hate about Mark Teixeira unless you're a Baltimorean? Like, mm-hmm. CeCe Sabathia, like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, pretend that, like, you know, I have something personally against Gary Sanchez. That's ridiculous, you know? Especially, you know, I'm 31 years old. It'd be a little more than sad if I'm going online being like, Gary Sanchez, or is it... I almost combined dick and jerk into one word, dirk. But I don't know, it's weird to dislike that team, but find really no one on the roster to focus that anger for. I will say, like, when Stanton homered twice on opening day, I found myself mad, but it wasn't like, I'm not mad at Giancarlo Stanton, that's what he is paid very handsomely to do. I'm just mad at the sequence of events that led to a loaded team that was within one win of the World Series last year, adding Giancarlo Stanton. You get more mad at, like, the situations than you do the actual players or the games or anything like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, even, you know, if you're at Yankee Stadium covering it and you get a good dramatic game, even if the Yankees win, it's still a good dramatic game that provides you plenty of storylines and narratives and, you know, a lot of fun stuff. So it's strange. I mean, it's covering these teams, especially covering the Yankees, makes it that much harder to kind of hate them, even though there is still that portion of my Red Sox fan brain that very much wants to. But again, it's just, I look at them like, well, who am I hating on this team, and what am I hating? Am I just hating the fact that they're the Yankees? Because that's, I guess it doesn't really matter who's on the team. I'm always going to hate that, you know? But am I really going to sit there and be like, oh, like last year, like, oh, G-Man Choi, oh, I hate that guy, like, nobody has an opinion on G-Man Choi. It's like, not a human being, it's not a human being alive that does that. But, so anyway, yes, I'm an old hand at this, but it's a skill, I guess you could call it, that has not been exercised all that much recently because, you know, the realities of my job, and also just, you know, you get older and you stop hating these guys so much, I guess.
All right, I want to ask you, because you brought up Stanton, and you tied Yankees and Phillies fans together as the worst, and I've criticized Yankees fans here for booing Stanton in his first homestand. I understood booing at the end of the game when he struck out, you know, with two runners on, and, you know, the 12th inning for his fifth strikeout of the day. I got that one. but like booing him on the home opener and, you know, kind of at other points throughout the homestand. I want to ask you, would that happen at Fenway if he were having the same kind of like 3-for-28 kind of homestand to start his Red Sox
career
after everything?
1,000,000%. Red Sox fans are also by and large terrible.
Mm-hmm.
A quick perusal of any Red Sox beat writer's Twitter replies will prove that in approximately 4 seconds. They are like, I obviously, as a Red Sox fan, I don't like Yankees fans because the majority of them, I don't like them, as I'm sure you are also, you know, even as a Yankee supporter to some degree, you know, you can acknowledge that a lot of the fans are horrible.
Awful.
There's a lot of awful people
that root for both teams as well as pretty much every team, because there's a lot of awful people.
But if J.D. Martinez, like, let's say over this coming 3-game series, if J.D. Martinez goes hitless and strikes out like 15 times or whatever, he's going to get booed. You know, that's true of just about anybody. If the Red Sox had gotten Stanton, and Stanton had spent the first week and a half of the season, you know, swinging through everything, he's going to hear boos. And I think that's true. Yankees fans, Red Sox fans, I'm hard pressed to imagine a fan base that wouldn't do that, except maybe like Padres fans or Reds fans or some other fan base that hasn't really had anything to think about over the last few years and doesn't have that reputation of just being horrible jerks. But
I mean, of course, St. Louis, the best fans in baseball would never
ever
dream of
the that. Absolute best fans. Fans that are so good that Stanton wanted no part of going to St. Louis. I don't know if it is against my mind. Maybe he talked to Dexter Fowler, and Dexter Fowler was able to tell him about the reception he's got.
All right, well, let's talk about the Sox, because I would like to know, beyond playing the Rays 6 times, how are these guys 8-1 when, like, J.D. Martinez is not hitting, Benintendi's not hitting, Jackie Bradley's not hitting? You know, basically it's been Mookie and Xander Bogaerts, and that's been your offense. I guess Hanley to some extent, but, like,
It does help when you start your season with 9 games against the Rays and the Marlins. Certainly that is a benefit. But like you said, there are only a few guys hitting, and now they're down Bogaerts, too, because he has, I believe, some kind of small, non-displaced fracture in his ankle, and he's going to be out the next 2 weeks, which is poorly timed on his part, you know, especially given the hot start he was off to and the fact that injuries last year were kind of the thing that kept him from really being productive at all. And so the worry there is, okay, now you're in that same situation where he's got a or hopefully he can overcome an injury and keep producing. But it really has been the pitching. I mean, you look at Chris Sales, had 2 very good first starts. David Price looks like the David Price of old. Rick Porcello, I will never fully trust Rick Porcello, speaking purely as a fan, because of how prone he is to giving up home runs. But he's been very good his first 2 starts. And even the back end of the rotation, they got, you know, a couple good outings from Mexican League veteran Hector Velasquez, from soft-tossing lefty Brian Johnson. And now they've got Eduardo Rodriguez back, and he didn't even make it through 4, I think, against the Rays in his first start back on Sunday, but he did strike out 7 guys. He's got that really good swing and miss stuff. He's just not particularly efficient about it. He's like a young John Lester in that regard. But
he's got swing, you know, and miss stuff, but also swing and hit stuff.
When it's not being located well, very much so. But I mean, right now the strength of them is the rotation, and the nice thing is for Boston that the rotation is lined up so that they got Sale in the first game and Price in the second. Those obviously the 2 guys you want. And granted, it's Sale Severino, which is going to be really, really fun. But, you know, that is kind of, I think, what's kept the Red Sox, or put the Red Sox where they are, because, you know, like you said, offensively they're not really producing consistently. They certainly seem to have a knack for rallies and late inning performances, as you saw on Sunday when they put up 6 runs in the 8th against the Rays. They've already had a couple other comebacks like that, or if not comebacks, at least some late scores. They did it to the Rays again a couple games before that when they tied it in the 9th and then walked off in the 11th or 12th, I can't remember which. But, you know, it's an offense that should be a little more consistent as the season goes on. I mean, I do think, you know, they've had a couple off days. They've had some weird start times. They've had the weather in Boston for that first home series was very, very cold, as it has been across pretty much the entire Northeast and Midwest. And again, losing Bogarts will hurt because now they're forced to play Brock Holt at shortstop, and Brock Holt is neither a shortstop nor a particularly good hitter, so that's thin out the lineup even more. But, you know, really, it has been the pitching, and it's going to be, I think most of the pressure is really going to be on Sale and Price over these first two games to keep them in, and especially Price, you know, to prove that, to keep proving, I guess, that he is back from injury, and especially, you know, first two starts were the Rays, and I believe the Rays again. He's on the Rays twice. So now is his first real test against a big boy lineup. Although I imagine the pressure probably on it. I would love to see. I'm not going after the series. I would love to see how many media are waiting at Giancarlo Stanton's locker in Fenway's tiny visitors clubhouse tomorrow afternoon when media availability begins. I would really love to see how many people are going to be standing there waiting for him to talk, because boy, does he kind of have a lot already riding on the series, fairly or unfairly.
That's if you think that he got booed at Yankee Stadium when he first steps into the box at Fenway, that's going to be something.
But it is just kind of a shame for him, and I guess for him and the Yankees both, and also for Aaron Boone, that he had such a bad homestand, because now, you know, a bad homestand is one thing. A bad series against the Red Sox when they're already 8-1, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to earn him some tabloid unhappiness, and certainly make the fans more pro. It's almost like, and I know, again, he'll make the adjustment because he's too good a hitter not to, but the pressure is just going to keep building and building and building until he rips off one of those week or 2 week long stretches where he homers 10 times in like 14 games. Which he will, and that's the thing. Like, he did it last year. There's no reason to think he won't do it this year. But it is just kind of unfortunate for him that, you know, this isn't an important series, so to speak. Like, three games in April is not going to determine anything. Even if one team or the other sweeps, it's probably not going to make a big difference in the grand scheme of things. But already for him, this does feel like a really important series, because he's got to do something. Like, and it doesn't have to be, you know, game-winning hit, or three home runs, but it's got to be, like, at least look like you have some idea of what's going on at the plate. And fortunately for him, his first two games are against Chris Sale and David Price. So he certainly doesn't get the easiest assignment right off the bat.
I don't know. I feel like Sale-Severino probably winds up being, like, a 12-10 game.
That's how it always works out. And then Porcello against, I imagine it's probably going to be Luis Sessa and CeCe Sabathia's spot is going to be a 1-0 thriller somehow.
Something like that, yeah.
The other one that's interesting to me is going to be, I know Aaron Judge's numbers last year against the Red Sox were bad, and granted that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but they were bad. His numbers against Sale were bad too, as is the case of a lot of guys. And, you know, it's very easy to say, well, yeah, that makes sense on all sides of the ball. But again, another guy where if he has a bad series and if he looks helpless against Sale, that's certainly something that tends to stick out, I think, in the minds of oh-so-rational Yankees fans who are always patient and quick to, or not quick to judge, rather. So that'll be interesting, too, is if both Judge and Stanton have bad series, mm-hmm. and if the Yankees lose the series on top of it, what the reaction's going to be like for them. Although they're not coming back to New York for a little bit, right?
They go to Detroit, and then they come back.
Yeah, so there'll be a few days, and the nice thing is for them, Detroit's pitching is woefully bad, so they'll get a few games there, even though it's going to be some freezing in Michigan at this point of the year. A few games to fatten up against some bad pitching, and hopefully put the, you know, if they do have a bad series, hopefully put the stink behind them, so to speak.
All right, well, John, thank you for describing Yankees fans as rational and not quick to judge. That will be reflected in the transcript of this show. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on here. I really appreciate it.
While I still have you, I would just like to add one thing that I think is very, very important to note in the context of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry, and that is that the Yankees blew a 3-0 series lead in the 2004 ALCS to the Boston Red Sox. I don't know if you knew about that. It's not something a whole lot of people know about, but the Yankees blew a 3-0 series lead to the Red Sox in the 2004 ALCS. But I feel like it's worth noting that the Yankees blew a 3-0 series lead in the 2004 LCS to the Red Sox. So just wanted to make sure that all your listeners were aware that that was a thing that happened.
I don't remember that, and I'm going to have to check the record books, but it doesn't...
It was pretty crazy. The Yankees won games one, two, and three of that series, and then they lost the next four, and as far as I can tell, that had never happened before and still has not happened in baseball history in a seven-game series. It's pretty crazy. I just want to make sure that your listeners are aware that that's the thing that happened, that the Yankees blew a 3-0 series lead in the ALCS against the Sox.
No, you would think that you would have heard about that, but the only big lead that I can remember being blown was that Warriors-Cavs NBA Finals. That to me is the gold standard of blowing, and that was 3-1. 3-0. It's happened in the NHL, but never in baseball. That's not something that doesn't make any sense.
The funny thing is Boston fans have been on both ends of that because the Bruins blew a 3-0 series lead against the Flyers in like 2000. Like
a couple years later, yeah.
Yeah, like 2007, I want to say. And that was a really good... I mean, I'm not a hockey fan, and I certainly don't keep up with the sport, but from what I remember from the friends I have who are hockey fans, that was a very, very good Bruins team that just bit at the worst possible moment. So, but then they won their Stanley Cup a couple years later, so...
They did.
It all worked out.
And they've got a pretty good chance at this one, so... We'll see how that goes. John, thank you so much for coming on here and spinning tales of things that supposedly happened 14 years ago that, you know, who knows? Who knows what facts really are in this world?
Was that really 14 years ago? My God.
Yep, we're all old.
Ooh, okay, that's great. Well, thank you for having me, Jesse, and allowing me to remind your listeners that the Yankees blew a 3-0 series lead in the 2004 ALCS. To the Red Sox, which had never happened before in baseball history, and has not happened again since.
John Taylor, everybody. Tweet at him, at J.A. Taylor. That's J-A-T-A-Y-L-E-R on your Twitter machine, and be sure to send him lots of love. Thanks a lot, John.
Please do. Thank you.
All right, so that's the show today. Come on back tomorrow. We'll have a reaction from Game 1 at Fenway Park. Start of a 3-game series. Yankees... suddenly, an important series for them. They want to at least avoid getting swept, so they're 7 games back, in the loss column at the very start of the season, because that sets you up in a place where you're pretty much chasing the whole year, or at least for a while, so you can catch up, and the Red Sox have their first slump. But, you know, we'll see what happens. It's April. This series should at least be fun, I guess, in comparison to other series that there will be down the line, but... Yeah, I think your mileage may vary on how much fun it is, depending upon the results. So, coming back tomorrow, can't wait, and we'll see you next time.